A devastated mother and aunt sharing their grief after losing a loved one in the El Mula banquet hall mass shooting.
Yeah, they are pleading for help from the public. CBS 4's Peter Dench joins us live from Northwest Miami-Dade with their desperate plea for help. Peter.
Well, Elliot and Lauren, this is the first time we have heard from the mother, aunt, and cousin of Desmond Owens, and these have been truly difficult times for them. In fact, his mother needed support as she struggled to get close to this makeshift memorial where three balloons spell out the letters Des for Desmond, her son. The mother of Desmond Owens is inconsolable and overwhelmed by grief.
I just feel that no parent should have to bury a child. That's it. No parent should have to bury a child. It don't go that way. It don't work like that.
Melanie Bruden's son was 26, a father of two small children. He lost his life early Sunday morning in a mass shooting at the El Mula Banquet Hall.
See, my family is truly heartbroken by this senseless, unnecessary demonic violence that's going on.
The shooting also claimed the life of Clayton Dillard III and left 21 others wounded, including 32-year-old Shaniqua Peterson, a mother who's hospitalized in critical condition with a bullet lodged in her head behind her ear.
This violence needs to stop. I need everyone, listen, I know the streets, and the street says snitches get stitches. Snitches get stitches. Snitches get stitches. But guess what? If you don't snitch, there will be no conviction. No snitching, no conviction. We need a conviction for those who are responsible for innocent people out enjoying themselves.
They were seen running for cover during the gunfire.
A shooting victim told his wife he was going to buy a pack of cigarettes. Minutes later, he was dead in Over the Rhine.
You know they're gonna stop all of this killing. It don't make no sense. It don't make no sense.
An emotional Mary Griffin Abel asked the question why over and over again Tuesday. The man she loved, James Abel, was gone, shot dead as he went to buy a pack of cigarettes.
He didn't deserve to go like this here.
As citizens marched against violence in the Over the Rhine Tuesday, Griffin was begging the public to help police crack the case.
Please, please, if you have any information, it's not about being a snitch. It's about us working together as a community.
And we're now seeing the face of one man who police say was senselessly gunned down. Good evening and thank you for joining us. I'm Wendy Ryan.
And I'm Jameson Euler, ABC Action News reporter Ryan Smith spoke with that man's family today. And Ryan, they have an urgent message.
I spoke with Ernest Fisher tonight, and he describes the past 24 hours to me as a nightmare. That's expected for any parent struggling with the loss he is right now. And he is also confident someone out there in the community has information, valuable information, that can help police catch his son's killer.
It's just sad the way you guys, innocent people getting killed like this.
Ernest Fisher Jr. was 33 years old, a father of three. His family says he was sitting with friends when a barrage of bullets was fired at them.
It's a shame you can't sit on your own porch or in your yard, enjoy yourself, but people come by shooting at you and stuff for no reason at all.
Tonight, Fisher's family is calling on community members to do their part and help police make an arrest.
Step forward, and if you know something, say something. Don't hide it, don't be scared.
Just it could be your family.
That's right, it could be your family. Anybody's family.
When he sees the images of another crime scene, another teen murdered.
What if I had gotten a phone call and that was my son?
He's troubled by the shooting death of 13-year-old Matthew McGee Saturday in the parking lot outside a Castleton fast food place. And he's troubled by something else.
There were witnesses to what happened, and some of them were young, and that some of their parents were counseling them not to speak to police. And I know we're dealing with this code of no snitching.
Reverend Harrison and 10 Point Coalition walked the streets pushing nonviolence. And they also challenged that no snitching code, urging people to speak up.
And it was a code that was created by criminals to protect themselves when they commit criminal activities. And now they're trying to normalize it and make it, the code you know, within our community, and we have to really push back against that.
Yeah, spread out a little bit more.
And Wednesday night, parents of some of the victims' friends did just that at a memorial for Matt McGee.
If y'all know anything, stop living by this no snitching rule. Speak. Because it could be you or your brother or your sister. Speak.
All right, so I'm back again. I'm back again for another video, and I'm entitled this video, The Code That Kills. The Code That Kills. And what you just watched was a series of news clips of stories of families pleading with the public to come forward and share the information they have about the murder of their loved ones, and to ignore the code of the ghetto that says snitching, if you snitch, then there's something wrong with you, or snitching is wrong, or like in the beginning where I played it three times where they say snitches get stitches, and now they're begging people to please divulge any information they have regarding the murder and the shooting of their loved ones. And what you're looking at on the screen at this particular moment is a collage of shooting victims throughout the nation, and that's from the National shooting victims of shootings memorial, National Shootings Victims Memorial. And the one thing I want you to notice about all these stories that you saw, and the one thing I want you to notice about this image you're looking at, is who the majority of the victims are. Who the majority of the victims are, and who the majority of the perpetrators are. Because we can also glean from these stories who they are. It's not a mystery, it's not a secret. And even though we talk about not snitching, we don't have to snitch to know who the majority of the people are behind the guns that are doing these shootings. And I want to shout out a channel right now, AK Nation News. AK Nation News is a channel that I've been watching recently. I watch it from time to time. I don't agree with everything he has to say, but I think he's starting to, his presentation of information that he provides has a lean to it from somebody black that I find very rare. You know, it's not an attack against the police. It's actually just the opposite. You know, he references George Floyd quite a bit. He references this kid out here that got shot in Kenosha. I forget his name. When telling these stories, because as you had these mass riots, you had these mass marches for people like George Floyd and this kid out here in where I live at, Kenosha, forget his name, he got shot 7 times by the police. You know, you had this outrage by the black community and Black Lives Matter and these huge protests and marches, and they shutting whole cities down. For one, George Floyd, who was a meth head, a drug addict, and, you know, just a bum, pretty much. And then this kid out of Kenosha, who was a career criminal and somebody who was abusing his girlfriend, in the act of abusing his girlfriend when he got shot, was in the act of stealing her rented car. She's the one that called the cop. There's an actual tape for calling the cops saying, you know, telling the cops to come and get him because he's trying to take her keys for her rented car. And that's why they showed up, you see? And so neither one of these cats are totally innocent victims at all. Not that I think they should be dead. No, I don't think either one of them should be dead. But there has to be, at some point, some sort of balance in the outrage in the so-called black community. You know, and on one hand, we don't want the police. We want to defund the police. The police is the worst thing that ever happened. But then on the other hand, as soon as something jumps off, the first motherfucker you call is the police. And you want them to investigate. You want them to do crime scene investigation. You want them to send out their detectives to try to find out who killed your loved one. And I'm sure with all these families, it's the same thing. And so there's something wrong here. And we're not seeing it. I constantly point that out. And I know I sound like a broken record in a lot of what I'm saying. But some things need to be fucking repeated over and over again in order for the possibility to exist of niggas understanding that we have a serious problem that has nothing to do with white people. It ultimately has nothing to do with white people. It has to do with us, what's happening inside us. Yes, the problem was caused by white people. Yes, they are the root cause of our problem. There's no doubt about that. But we can't get to them until we deal with the damage that's inside us. And we're not doing that. We've been on a run, you know, just on the all out, all over the fucking place run since 1863. All over the place, you're doing whatever you want to do, any kind of way you want to do it. But you know, but then we want to be called a people. Although we don't want to act like a people. We're seen as a people. We're seen the same. We're looked at the same. We're treated the same around the world. Like I was watching. I should show this clip, but I think I'll hold off on the clip. There's a clip I'm going to show in one of my videos. Probably the next video I'm going to show a clip from the Lewis Henry Gates series, Finding Your Roots. And I thought it was pretty fascinating. It was about, he was doing the genealogy on somebody white. I believe it was Anderson Cooper, or it was Ken Burns, one of them. Family members had got involved in something during slavery times that I'll talk about in the next video. Yeah, it's real interesting. But the other thing is that he had a couple of people, and I don't know I don't know their names. One was a black female, at least you would consider her black. She doesn't consider herself black, obviously. And there was another guy who was like Mexican, half white Spanish. And the thing that stuck out in my mind when they did they do this DNA test where they, you know, they show what percentage of whatever you are, whether you're from France or Germany, and how much your percentage of your blood is European, Native American, African, and so forth like that. Well, both of these two individuals had African blood, especially the black female. Her reaction, you know, is pretty much a telltale sign of how, you know, we're seeing, and how, you know, just the whole black race is seeing, you know, even how we look at each other, how we look at ourselves. Because she was not happy, excited at all about that. She was so excited and so happy to find out that she was 24% Jewish. She was practically jumping for joy about the fact that she had 24% Jewish blood. But when he told her percentage of African blood, not only did he tell her percentage of African blood, but what happened was, the thing that stuck out in my mind with this story is that she was one of the only people on that show that they could actually trace her ancestry back to the first one of her ancestors to arrive from Africa. One of her ancestors was enslaved in Jamaica, and got off the boat, the slave ship in Jamaica. And they knew that since she got off the slave ship in Jamaica. And they told her this, and she was like, yo, yeah, whatever. You're like, really? Well, whatever. You know, okay. But when they told her she was Jewish, man, she probably jumped for joy and, you know, turned the cartwheels and shit. And now the Mexican dude, I can understand him, you know. But then at the same time, he was more happy about the fact that he had spent the majority of his DNA, or I think it was another 25% of his DNA, or maybe more than that. No, it was more than that. I think 25% of his DNA was Native American, and like maybe 70% of it was Spanish, from Spain, from, you know, actual Spanish Spain. He was happy about that. You know, he was really excited about that. But he also had African blood. He didn't even react to that shit at all. He said, "Oh, you also like?" He said, "He's something like maybe like 3-4% or 5% African." African blood. Oh, he didn't even, oh well, you know, shit happens. What can you do? Yeah, somebody made a mistake. Somebody, you know. So this is basically how, you know, others look at us, and how we even look at ourselves in this negative light that Africans have. As well, we should, because we've done nothing to again undo the damage that we suffered for that time of slavery. And the damage that we've done to ourselves, because other people know the fact that as soon as you say African, you can try to justify the shit, and niggas try to justify it and try to tell a story about it. Nobody wants to hear that shit. It's the same thing with the story of Ham. Oh, well, no, that, you know, that's not, but that is in the book. And that's how people interpret the shit, no matter how you try to clean it up. The story comes out that Noah, God cursed son, Noah's son Ham with blackness and made him serve in the mid habit, fucking story goes. And of course, there's thousands of ways to you know, twist and turn it. But that's how it comes out. That God cursed Noah's son Ham with blackness. People hear that. They don't hear all the rest of that shit you're talking about. The same thing, people hear the fact that Africans sold other Africans into slavery. They know that. You can twist and turn any kind of way you want to and do all kind of fucking mental gymnastics about it all you want. They see it just that Africans sold other Africans into slavery. They don't see the rest of that shit. And we've done nothing to dispel that myth that we're fucked up like that. We're just fucked up. And nobody wants to claim they're African. Most people don't want to claim the fact they have any African blood in them at all. Which I really can't blame them from what I can see around what's going on with black people today and what has gone on in the recent past. And we can dig back, you know, and go back thousands of fucking years in the whatever and try to come up with some great African civilization and one that's just a bunch of bullshit. But that was then. This is now. What have you done lately? And not very much. Except enrich a bunch of white people, make them more rich and more powerful than they ever believed they could be. You know, and that was done without blood, sweat, and fucking tears and death and suffering. But yet we can't come together and do shit for ourselves. Oh, but we're not damaged. There's nothing wrong with us. We're perfect in every way. And there's a lot wrong with us. So the code that kills, you know, I want to get, let me get back into really talking about this because, you know, I get tired of hearing this on code shit. And somebody, and every time I hear it, I throw up in my fucking mouth when I hear it. Because it's truly some nigga shit. That on code and code of the ghetto, nigga shit, it's nigga shit. Excuse my expression. Or don't excuse my expression. Fuck that. That's what I meant to say. Just like that. And this no stitching code is just one of many. That's a bunch of nigga shit that ultimately is going to lead to our death if we can't come with some new codes to live by and to exist by. And that doesn't just mean we're talking about some fucking code. You can't have no code and nothing unless some serious, serious reexamination of our entire fucking humanity is done by each and every one of us. And again, if I say it a billion times, I say it a billion fucking times, a program of rehabilitation, a program, a readjustment, a factory reset of our entire and complete humanity needs to be done. That's how deep the fucking damage is. We've normalized something that's sick. We've normalized mental illness. And this is why people, you have all these different LGBTQ, all these different things. People want to be all kinds of shit. Of course, why not? Why shouldn't they want to be at whatever they want to be, taking their fucking minds? We're doing it. We do it. It is unnatural and it goes against nature. First of all, the first unnatural thing that we've never dealt with is the fact that you have Africans and Europeans living together in the same hemisphere. Go to Africa, show me one purely white African country. I'm talking about blonde hair, blue-eyed white people, where blonde hair, blue-eyed white people live at. You're not going to find it. Go to Europe and find me any fucking nation over there where everybody is black. I mean, African black. You're not going to find it. It doesn't exist. There's a reason for that in nature. There's a reason for that in nature. Like there's a reason for why many other people have, we call them races, have separated from each other. We'll see it in the animal kingdom. We'll see the same thing where other creatures have separated. Matter of fact, let me put my chart up. Let me just go ahead and put my chart up right now. Let me do that while I'm thinking about it. Let me put my chart that shows very clearly the separation of animals of the same species, how they have separated out into individual families. That again, like I've told you in the past, and you can see for yourself, they do not interbreed, they do not interact, they do not eat the same foods, they do not speak. If you want to call the way the sounds they make a language, you can. Because animals make a sound that we can call a language, they communicate with each other. Well, when you look at these images of these families, these species of animals, like the whales, where they got whales, monkeys, penguins, other than outside human beings, it's the same thing with them. A blue whale and a beluga whale cannot communicate. They will not interbreed. They can't interbreed. If they did interbreed, if we could force a beluga whale and a blue whale to interbreed, the child, whatever offspring was born, will be born sterile. We see it with the mule. We see it very clearly with the mule. That's something that people make every day. When you cross a horse with a donkey, the result is a mule. That mule cannot procreate. It is born sterile. Why? Because it goes the fuck against nature. Even though they're both equine. Yes, they can have sex. Yes, they can make a baby. But that baby can't make a baby. Because that baby has no place in nature. It has no place in the natural. Only as a domesticated animal. It's the same thing for the lion and the tiger. There's something called the liger. The liger is born sterile. It cannot procreate because it's unnatural. Why is it unnatural? Because it has no place in nature. The liger. The tiger does, the lion does, but the liger does not. And it's the same thing. It would be the same thing. And I wish it was the same thing for Africans and Europeans. I wish that we had separated long enough so that when a European and African had babies, that baby could not procreate. That baby would be born sterile. It should be. It should be fucking born sterile because it's an unnatural thing, unnatural act. And so when we're dealing with this code of the ghetto Negro crap, and that's what it is. It has nothing. There's no teeth to it. There's nothing back. It has no backing. It's not backed up by anything. There's nothing in it to really hold it to hold anybody to those codes. It's just some shit that we say. And you know, some people kind of you know, like a half baked cake. Some of it is well done. Some of it is half done. Some of it is fucking almost raw type shit. We cannot, for survival's sake. Continue to live like we're living today, because we're living like we used to live in the 20th century and in the 19th century. This is not the 20th or the 19th century. This is a whole new time. There's some whole new challenges that we're about to face here. And we're seeing the very beginnings of that shit. And we're not ready to deal with that shit in the slightest least. And this is just one example of it. This code of the ghetto, you know, code of silence bullshit. Well, it's not bullshit because you have motherfuckers that, you know, yeah, when you snitch on some motherfuckers, yeah, that could get you killed. That could actually get somebody in your family killed. So I understand the passion of these people in these videos calling people to come forward, but they ask people to put their lives on the fucking line. When they wouldn't do it. How many times would they do it? They wouldn't have did it. That takes for the community to come together as one and become united in every fucking way to weed out and to get rid of all these underground and all these gangs and all the rest of these thug motherfuckers that are running around here. But again, that takes commitment and dedication to a way of life and thinking. That's something totally new and something totally different. Otherwise, the killings are only going to get worse. They're going to become more frequent as they are now. And yeah, you're going to have these gangs of Negroes come like you have now, who will feel they can do what the fuck they want, which they can. And, you know, if they kill one of your loved ones, well, fuck it. That's just how it is, because they're in this gang. And if you open your mouth and you say anything, you know, yeah, you're going to get stitches or you're going to get some bullets in your ass. See, this is where we really are. So these families, the mothers can cry and the fathers can cry and whoever else can cry all the fuck they want. That's not solving the fucking, nobody gives a shit. That's the problem. We have to give a shit. Not just when somebody dies, but all the fucking time. And main thing you have to give a shit about is the fact that we have a damage and we have been living with a damage that we have not healed or cured. We've just learned to live in a damaged and broken fucking state since we left out of slavery. As I think about the time, like, you know, during Jim Crow, that was one of the most creative times for black people.
in the depths of you know, that time when we were involved in Jim Crow, I mean, early on in Jim Crow, I'm talking about in the late 19th century, what did you have? You had the creation of ragtime, the creation of jazz. That's like black niggas created rap here recently. You had to create a lot of all kinds of dances and shit, that the cakewalk and the whatever the fuck else they were doing back then. This one niggas being lynched by the dozens every week and being oppressed every kind of way. What were we doing? Shaking our ass, dancing, playing music, you know, finding ways to self-medicate through music and through whatever else, and not really dealing with or facing the fucking problem that we're faced with. And again, the fact that how we're living is unnatural and ultimately something sick. And it cannot, will not last, nor should it last. Because our relationship with these white motherfuckers come about as a result of criminal acts, and slavery being the main one. And we can't just look at white people, look at ourselves too, understand, yeah, we were involved in that shit. We were involved in it. Our ancestors were involved in that. There wasn't nobody from outer space. You can't separate yourself from those African people. Those are your relatives that sold you into slavery. Those are our relatives that sold us into slavery, that kidnapped us and shit. And we have to get down to why. There's a reason why. And we have to deal with it. And then what it is like discovering you have a fucking illness that no one has ever described before, or a sickness that nobody's ever classified. And that's basically what it is for us. We have a sickness and a mental illness that no one has ever described or seen before. And that's at the heart of our problem. So we're not dealing with the problem. We don't, because we don't know what it is. Because nobody's ever had it before. Nobody's ever been sick the way that we've been made sick. And if we don't cure the sickness, then there's no hope. There's no future. Again and again, there's only one big circle right back to where the fuck we started from. Either back to a cotton field or the bottom of a mass grave. Or again, this will be turned into some landfill and or fertilizer. That'll be our future. And these codes of the ghetto, this code of the ghetto, no snitching, all the rest of this shit that benefit a few who are involved in criminal activity, well, that's only going to magnify over time. Like I told you, it's my belief that at some point, there's going to be I just can't see how this not. Now I was going to make this video. I'm going to do this video recently. I'm thinking about doing it. It's called Exiled. And what I'm thinking about talking about in that video is, what if by some chance this nation, you know, the nature of this nation, the power structure of this nation became Nazi-like and fascist-like? Well, that silent white majority took over the government and the army and the military, and white supremacy was something that wasn't just whispered, but that was shouted and that was promoted out loud. What would happen then? And these white motherfuckers who had all the power, all the guns, all the tanks, all of everybody else, they decided that no, they're not gonna kill the non-whites. But again, they're gonna make a separation. They're gonna make us separate. They're going to separate themselves from us. And so if you consider yourself, call yourself a Jamaican, if you call yourself Puerto Rican, you call yourself whatever that's not American, then that's where you're going to be sent. And you have to live there. And you have to survive there, because there'll be no fucking support from the United States at all. I want you to try to picture that if you possibly can. Everybody that considers himself a Puerto Rican being forced to live on the island of Puerto Rico. Everybody considers themselves Jamaican, Haitian, Dominican, whatever else you want to call yourself, going to have be forced to live in the country that you claim to be a native to or originate from. I know you can't see it, but I can. It'd be a fucking death sentence for those people. It'd be a death sentence. They couldn't live on those islands. I mean, with no outside aid, no outside support, no food. They have to grow their own food to support themselves. It would be a horror show. But this is what I picture at some point in the future, that this separation is going to take place. And if it happens to the American Negro, it's going to be 10 times worse. We're definitely not ready for that in the slightest least. And these motherfuckers running around here in these gangs, that's going to be, you're looking at your leadership of the future. They're the ones that are going to run your community. If it gets down to the point where they say, listen, man, y'all motherfuckers going to be, we're going to give you these cities and states over here, and this is where you're going to live. No, again, zero white oversight. No white police, no white policing, no white political, judicial, nothing. You have to do all that for yourself. Police yourself, govern yourself, judge yourself, all of that be done by you. And we'll provide all of the material aid, whatever you need, infrastructure, otherwise, we'll do that for you. But the rest of that shit, you got to do for yourself. It would be a death sentence for the American Negro. We're not ready to live on our own. We're not ready to be truly, to have any, take the next step of being free, which is to separate from those who enslaved us in the first place. And enslaved us not only mentally, but psychologically and spiritually in every other way also. We've been enslaved. So we broke the physical chains. We haven't broke those other chains, have not been broken, and we don't want to break them right now, because we're benefiting from those chains. We're benefiting from those psychological mental chains. We're profiting from them. We're becoming more successful in society by still having those chains attached to us. It's not until this whole thing starts to break down, it will. I'm keep telling you, this thing is going to come up, the wheel's going to come off this shit. And I just had a thought. This is a theory. It may sound a little outlandish, or it may not. I don't know. But I made this connection between the rising price of gasoline and this pandemic. And I'm thinking that this pandemic is nothing more than a distraction, a big distraction, to do things like raise the price of gas. You know, it's like I told you, what a magician does when he does a magic trick. And he says, you know, look, there's nothing up my sleeve. He shows you his right hand and shows you the sleeve of his right hand. But while he shows you the sleeve of his right hand and you see his right hand, you know, he's waving his right hand around, he's doing some other shit with his left hand that you can't see. And I'm thinking that this is part of the reason why gas prices have gone up so high so fast. And I've showed you that just last year, the price of a gallon of gasoline in the city I live in had gotten down where I lived at to $1.19 a gallon. In some places, they say it got down to 98 cents a gallon. This was 98 cents a gallon last year. Now the cheapest gas you can find is about $2.95. The average price out here is like $3.29 a gallon. And rising, mind you, and rising. Now they were saying, well, the price was so low because nobody was driving. Well, is any more people driving this year than they were last year? I don't think so. So I think the whole thing is just a distraction, just to part one reason, and I'm sure there are many others, why they want to distract us with this pandemic shit, is to raise the price of energy. And gasoline in particular. We're going to see it also in fuel, heating fuel, and natural gas, and other fuels that, you know, power this fucking nation, that keep this nation alive. And then I also want to remind you that as you see this push for electric cars, well, some of you slept on a video I did a while back where I did a video. There's actually a documentary called Who Killed the Electric Car? You ought to check that video. The push now, why are they pushing electric cars now? But back in the 90s, when they had a successful electric car that the people who bought that car loved the fucking car and willing to keep. But see, the thing about it, they weren't allowed to buy the cars. They could only lease the cars. And once the lease was up, everybody that owned those cars had to surrender the car. And every last one of those successful electric cars that people loved were fucking destroyed. Why? But now everything's electric car. What happened? Energy, crude oil, and that's stuff the gasoline comes from, right? The amount that's in the ground is beginning to decrease more and more every day. And so what does that mean? If there's less of a resource, what happens? The price goes up. It becomes more expensive. To the point where, no, get, I believe crude oil will never run out. Will always be there. It's just it won't be there in the amounts that will allow it to be cheap enough for the average American to afford to buy gasoline and put gasoline in their car. Could you imagine having to pay $25, $30 a gallon for gasoline or more for gasoline? And that's a very real possibility that that could be the case. And so that's why this push for the electric car is, you know, so big now as opposed to in the 90s when it first came out, because it was much more crude oil in the ground. And so that the people that manufacture, and then the other thing about, you have to realize about electric car, it pretty much destroys the automotive industry. It pretty much destroys the auto parts manufacturing industry, because electric cars have no end. There's no internal combustion engine, and the internal combustion engine consists of thousands of parts and parts that have to be replaced and repaired that do not exist on the electric car. So that's a whole industry that's a huge industry that's being impacted by these electric cars who do not need the kind of service that an internal combustion engine car needs. Oil changes, transmission fluid, whatever you can imagine. I mean, that's hundreds of billions of dollars every year that's being taken out of somebody's pocket. So you know things have to be getting pretty fucking serious in order for this push for this electric car shit in the face of that, the destruction of the whole industry. And that's because, and some of you may not be familiar with my channel, my first channel, which is still around. It's called Out of Gas 88. I'm going to try to put the link for that channel in the description box. Well, I will put the link in the description box. It may have to come back to the video because, sometimes I forget. But once I listen to the video, I remember and I'll put the link in. But I should remember to put the link in. But just watch the earliest videos. Look for the earliest dates, which I believe will be sometime around April 2000 and either 7 or 8. Well, I believe it's 2008, April 2008 or something, maybe like January 2007. Watch those first early videos because I provide a lot of information about the importance of crude oil in this nation's life. It's the lifeblood of this nation. Without crude oil, you cannot have a society like this. A society like this cannot exist without, you know, the benefits of crude oil and what it does. And I recommend this documentary again for you to watch. It's called A Crude Awakening, The Oil Crash. A Crude Awakening. You know, watch that. Very, very, very important video, information packed. And it's something that, you know, will, again, allow you to peep game in terms of what's going on out here in some parts of the world that are going to impact your life in a very serious way, as you can see now with the price of gasoline rising and, you know, heating oil and all the rest of that rising. Of course, that causes all the other prices to rise. And that's all it can do is rise, is get more expensive over time. And so while we involved in this code of the ghetto, code of the bullshit, whatever situation, where people are dying more and more every day behind this shit. And then, of course, you don't want to say nothing because you don't want to get shot, you know, by some motherfucker who found out that you told. And then you find he's a part of some gang, and now he's looking for you or your family, you know. And so I understand the pain these people are in, but that's not, nobody's going to come on and open their fucking mouth. Well, I want to open my mouth and say to help you, right? Who going to help me when these niggas come knock on my door? Who going to do something for me? Nobody. So they're really crying into the fucking wind. They're really crying into the wind. And this is, again, the importance of us having a fucking orthodox togetherness. It has to be a complete factory reset. It has to be a complete overhaul of our whole fucking point of view, and the way we look at, think about, and live our life has to fucking change if we want any hope for a future on this fucking planet. Otherwise, it's a wrap for black people. You can wrap it up. Now, again, some be kept around fucking pets, of course, and to, you know, maybe to provide labor for the elite class that will still be in power. And again, if you haven't watched the movie Soylent Green, please watch the movie Soylent Green, because that's basically telling your future right there. Where you have super rich and super poor, and there's nothing in the middle. There's no middle. There's only rich, extremely rich, and extremely fucking poor. That's what it's going to be in the future. There's no way around that. And there's a lot more I can say about this whole situation. But again, I really wanted to shout out AK Nation News and his take on this situation with these shootings and killings in the black community not being talked about by Black Lives Matter, and these black activists are not raising, you know, huge crowds to go and march against the shootings of little children. Fucking, there's a little 11-year-old girl and her 5-year-old sister got shot out here where I live at the other day. The 11-year-old girl died, and the little 5-year-old's in critical condition behind some dumb shit. But again, this is only going to get worse. It's only going to get worse over time. It's not going to get better. It's only going to get worse. And it's only going to change if we make a deliberate effort to change it. But not just change the conditions, change ourselves. Change our whole fucking thought pattern about life itself. Yes, we need rehabilitation. We've been needing it. How could we not, after we've been through in slavery, how the fuck could we not need to be rehabilitated? I'm trying to figure out how we figure that. But you see, we're not going to realize that, you know, we need this until it's too fucking late. Until it's too late, because, you know, we are definitely a number one on the hit parade of motherfuckers to be gotten rid of if things get that bad, where they say, hey, listen, man, you know, we can make it if we just get rid of one group of people. If we just get rid of one group of people, you know, all the rest of us will be all right. Who do you think that group would be that they would think would choose to get rid of? Who do you think it would be? That ain't rocket science. There's no rocket science involved in that. It'd be us. And so the code that kills, you know, and that's all the code, the ghettos that we live by today, that, you know, really were brought about by criminals and niggas is involved in criminal activity, because this is the only way that they feel that they can be successful is selling drugs and you know, other things in the black community to sell poison to their people. And I'm not knocking the drug dealer necessarily, but then again, I understand that, hey, listen, there is no other opportunity out there for you, really, you know, unless you want to be humiliated and fucking degraded in the workplace. Because we don't have any businesses. We have no opportunities for our children. We have no fucking industries for them to take over. Or we have no fucking factories, nothing for them to be a part of. We have to go to somebody to despise their fucking guts, you know, like I did. And when I wanted to be a machinist, you know, I had to ask a motherfucker who hated my guts, who couldn't stand me, you know. And that's what it was. The motherfucker that I worked for before, Hugh C. Mathison, a staunch, this is back in 1983. A staunch fucking white racist motherfucker. And everybody else I worked with since then was basically the same fucking way. Maybe one or two exceptions. And so this what is a motherfucker supposed to do? They're gonna do what they have to do. But ultimately it leads to the death of the so-called black community. It leads to a lot of fucking death. Because they feel they have no other way to be successful but to sell dope or to do whatever else. Right, in criminal activity to survive and to live, or whatever the case may be. And we could do something about it. It wouldn't be easy, extremely painful. And the more time we take to deal with this issue the right way, the harder it gets, the more painful it gets, and the more impossible it fucking gets. And there is such a thing as too fucking late. There is such a thing as too late. This such thing is you waited too fucking long, and now the problem is so big, the problem is so overwhelming, that the only thing left for you is fucking death. Or the only thing left for us is death. Are we reaching that point? I believe we are. Very quickly, reaching that fucking point. But the conditions have to change and be, we have to get fucked up. We have to be out in the street, hungry and dirty and stinking, and standing online waiting for somebody to feed you, whatever the case may be, because the economy has crashed. And all your paper money is now just toilet paper. You can wipe your ass with it. And, you know, whatever else. We have to be fucked up. We have to be fucked, physically fucked up, in order to see In order for the possibility to exist for us to see how fucked we really are, how damaged we really are as a group. Because as long as we're in our comfort zone, you look good, you feel good, you smell good, you know, you got a warm place to go to the bathroom, some food to eat, then ain't nothing, there's nothing going to change in the mind of a Negro. A Negro's mind is not going to change as long as he's in his comfort zone. And so I would just wanted to mention that to you, and I wanted to show these images in this memorial for shooting victims. Now, we're 13% of the fucking population, but we're 60% or better of the gunshot victims, you know, victims of people killed by guns in this nation. If that doesn't show you that we have a problem, I don't know what the fuck it will. So anyway, you know, there's more that I can say. What I'm going to do at this time is cut this video short. Thank you for your time. You take it easy.